President Obama met with the Governors Association yesterday to discuss how states would be affected by across-the-board federal spending cuts that are set to kick in this week, unless Congress can reach a deal to avoid sequestration. He told them that the $85 billion in automatic budget cuts will cripple economic progress in their states. And he tried to recruit them to lobby Congress to avoid sequestration with a new deal to reduce the national debt. We are going to get two different takes on sequestration this hour, and we'll welcome your questions and your reactions. How concerned are you about these looming spending cuts? Or do you welcome them? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, February 26th. We will talk first with a guest from the Center for American Progress who will talk about the negative impact of the sequester. And we welcome your thoughts for her at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Anna Chu, Policy Director for the Think Progress War Room at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Her recent piece is titled The Impact of the Sequester on Communities Across America, and we have that linked to the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for joining us. So you say the sequester spells bad news for America. How bad is it going to be?
Well, first, I just, wanted to thank everyone for listening. Thank you for having me here. But yes, I think the sequester will be damaging for the American economy. What the sequester is it's automatic, indiscriminate, across-the-board spending cuts. So we're not talking about targeted, smart spending reductions, but we're talking about reductions to vital, key programs that really are helping the American people recover. And, we've seen a good recovery so far. We've seen about, over 4 million jobs added. But there are still families out there that are still struggling. But it's at this time that the sequester will take place that the Republicans are saying, yes, let's have these automatic spending cuts to programs that would help the middle class. Let's cut schools. Let's cut teachers. Let's cut money for job training programs. I mean, under the sequester, things that, programs that help Wisconsinites, find new jobs, help them, regain skills for employment, they would be cut. And we're talking about about 23,000 less Wisconsinites receiving these services.
Well, now our next guest is going to say that he has stopped worrying about the sequester. He says that the spending cuts, though they are across the board, are minuscule compared to the actual spending levels. What do you say to that?
I think that that's very, frankly, a very callous way of looking about spending and about the actual impact to families and communities. It's not a comparison of, what the cuts are. And mind you, the Budget Control Act has already brought spending down to levels that we haven't seen since the Eisenhower administration. But to say that, compared to the larger overall number, this is not a big deal is to say it's not a big deal that 8 airports in Wisconsin will be closing. So what about those communities? What happens to those communities that depend on these airports? What about the small business owners that depend in those communities that depend on these airports? Or the families that need to go and see their relatives that are sick or caring? Or what about the children? About the 10,000 fewer students that will be served because of the money that will be lost to Wisconsin schools.
Really? 8 airports are going to close in Wisconsin?
So that is what the FAA has come out with so far. They say that they've come out with a tentative list of airports that may have to close because of the sequester, and they've identified 8 in Wisconsin. They've identified one, the CWA, which is the Central Wisconsin, and if I say this wrong, I apologize, Mosinee?
Mosinee, maybe?
Yes, Mozenese. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that one's closing. Chippewa Valley Regional is closing. Kenosha Regional is closing, maybe closing. Southern Wisconsin Regional in Jansville. Mm-hmm. La Crosse. Lawrence Timmerman, Milwaukee. Whitman Regional. And then Waukesha.
Waukesha. You've got some good Wisconsin names there. Yeah, so
I apologize.
No, that's all right.
I'm
bad. Wisconsin natives struggle with them, too. So, all right. I didn't realize that. So you also say that education is going to be affected. How are students and teachers going to be harmed by these cuts?
Mm-hmm. So with education, the federal government does provide a lot of different types of funds to states to help with their primary, secondary schools, with programs aimed towards young children, also with programs aimed towards children with disabilities. So in terms of primary and secondary education, Wisconsin stands to lose about $8.5 million. And, that sounds like a large sum, but what does $8.5 million mean? It means you're putting about 120 teachers' jobs at risk. So that's fewer teachers right now when classrooms are already, growing and impacted. And that's going to affect about 10,000 students.
And you say there could also be fewer firefighters. How does that work?
So these are cuts, made across the board. And there's other types of, programs that the government gives, the federal government gives to states to help fund the fire departments. So there's twofold. It helps fund staffing, so the hiring of firefighters, and it also helps fund equipment needs. So your vital, critical equipment for firefighters, be it like the helmets, the fireproof gear that they wear, hoses, things that they need for the stations, and that's going to be cut as well.
And healthcare programs might be cut? Like what?
There are some programs that will impact the public, public health that will be cut. We do know that Medicare cuts will happen, but those will be limited to about 2%. But there's other types of things that will affect, our public health. For instance, the Department of Public Health Services for Wisconsin will lose about $108,000. And this is money that they can use to do things like fund HIV tests. So you're looking at fewer HIV tests. You're also looking at cuts to programs like the National Institutes of Health, which does cutting edge research on the latest, medicines, the latest technologies. And we're looking at job losses. We're looking at fewer grants. So we're looking at less research, into medicine.
Yeah, I know that there are other cuts, and we can go into them a little bit later. I know that today President Obama is going to be going to some communities that have a lot of, like where there's military spending going on. He's going to go to the Virginia shipyards today mm-hmm. to talk about that. I know our own Governor Walker here in Wisconsin was not too concerned about the sequester cuts. In part, he said, because we don't depend a lot on military spending here in Wisconsin. But you're saying it's still going to hit us hard.
Well, Wisconsin may not be, Virginia in the sense of how strong the government contract and the military industry is. But there are still Department of Defense employees in Wisconsin that are working. And when you're looking at cuts to them, it's about 3,000 civilian Department of Defense employees in Wisconsin that will be cut, or not cut, but furloughed. And you're looking at cuts to the bases, mm-hmm. and it's about $1 million lost to the Army bases in Wisconsin. And it's just at a time when we're still recovering, and we've seen great strides so far, but it's still a soft recovery. Do we really want to do this type of detrimental across-the-board cuts to everything and everyone?
Our guest is Anna Chu. She is with the Center for American Progress Action Fund. And we are talking with her about her recent piece titled The Impact of the Sequester on Communities Across America. She says that if these across-the-board federal spending cuts take place this week, it will harm those looking for work, seeking health care, public safety, education, and more. And we're welcoming your thoughts and questions on whether or not you are concerned about these looming budget cuts coming at the end of the week. We're going to hear from a guest coming up after the news after 7:30 who says this is a good thing. What do you say? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Some areas of fog this morning. We can expect high temperatures today in the mid to upper 30s, but snow and wind likely tonight, especially for the southeastern half of the state. There is a winter weather advisory that is in effect for much of southeast and far south central Wisconsin for late this afternoon through tonight. And several inches of snow is expected. The heaviest snow amounts are expected to be in Milwaukee, Racine, and Kenosha. And strong winds will cause some drifting snow problems, especially tonight. So take care. It's 20 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, February the 26th. We are getting two takes on sequestration during this hour. First with a guest who says that these across-the-board automatic spending cuts that are set to kick in this week unless Congress can reach a deal to avert sequestration are going to be harming communities in Wisconsin and across America. She is Anna Chu, Policy Director for the Think Progress War Room at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Coming up after 7:30, we will hear from a guest who says that he has stopped worrying about and now loves the sequester. We'll find out why after 7:30. Ralph in Little Suamico is our first caller. Hello, Ralph.
Yes, hello. Good morning.
Morning.
Thank you for taking my call. I have listened to this for the last 3 months and probably have relived it several times in my lifetime, and nothing ever really happens. And there isn't going to be a sequester. They're going to kick the can down the road again. And the spending is not going to stop until they are unable to print money anymore. And as long as they can develop funds, the federal government's going to continue to spend. And that doesn't matter whether that's Republican or Democrat administration. So the sky is falling. The Chicken Little type thing that we're hearing right now, it doesn't do anything except scare people and stops them from investing, stops them from spending, and that's all that's going to happen. It's just going to scare a bunch of people, that's all.
Well, you're so talking about it we shouldn't be talking about it, or are you blaming Congress and the president for the whole automatic sequester thing?
I'm blaming everybody because they're overspending because the public wants them to overspend. And so it's the whole entire system is set up so that everybody is frightened to death to cut anything because they're going to lose votes.
All right, so this is just to scare people and so government can keep on spending. Anna Chu, what do you think?
You know, I understand, you know, his general frustration with everything that's happening, excuse me, with Congress, in Washington right now with the back and forth that, you know, the public constantly sees. But I think what the public doesn't realize is that we've already cut spending, that we've already cut, you know, the Budget Control Act last, that was passed in 2011, had an automatic, you know, $1 trillion in spending that was cut. And that's already gone into effect. That's already taken place. And in total, the president's already worked with Congress to reduce the deficit by more than $2.5 trillion. And this is not, you know, monopoly money. This is hard, serious efforts that were already made. And I think the next step and the question here right now is, if we work together to reduce the deficit further, what do we do? How do we do it? Are we going to take a balanced approach that asks, you know, cut spending further in a smart way and also ask, you know, those who can afford it the most to pay a little bit more and to close some of the wasteful tax loopholes? Or are we going to do it in this haphazard, indiscriminate fashion and hurt everyone? There's a smart way. And then there is the let's not actually think about it. Let's just take a chainsaw and hack things away.
Now, Rose says that this sequester will never happen, that the can will be kicked down the road. Is that your analysis?
I think we'll see in the coming days, you know, what will happen. We have seen some kicking of the can down the road a few times in the past, and that's very unfortunate. But a lot of the times we've seen the president make an offer to Republicans to compromise, to come to the table. You know, he's offered a plan that will cut the deficit by $4 trillion, and it will actually cut spending faster and more than it raises revenue. But we've also seen some strident leaders from the Republican Party say no, that they do not want to compromise, that it's no revenue, and they just want cut, 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 cut. So if they keep going down this road, you know, it's either going to hit or they're going to have to keep kicking it down the road and keep arguing.
We had a caller who wanted to clarify that he doesn't believe that there will be airport closures. He says that the number of air traffic controllers would be reduced, but that the airports would not actually be closed, that there would be furloughs of security screeners, layoffs of large number of air traffic controllers, but not necessarily, you know, there'd be major delays, but not necessarily full closures. Is he right, or do you have different information?
I mean, I think that at the end of the day, we will have to look towards the FAA and how they choose to actually implement this. They have released a list of air traffic control facilities that will be closing. And that will impact these 8 airports in Wisconsin. Now, without the air traffic control facilities actually servicing these airports, I may not be the expert in flights, but if you do not have the air traffic control facility servicing the airports, I'm not sure what the airports are going to do in terms of actually being able to fly.
Let's go to Bill in Waukesha next. Hello, Bill.
Hello.
Hi, Bill. How are you?
Good. I just wanted to state a comment that we hear sometimes, but not all the times, about the whole subject, that none of these cuts will cut into any budget spending that they had for last year. It's just a decrease in the increase that they all hope for. And probably 1 out of 10 reporters says this, so I don't know if it's true, but is this a decrease in the increase, what all departments were hoping for? So they'll actually be working with more money this year than they ever have, just not as much as they would like.
Is that the way it is, Anna?
Well, I think there's two comments in terms of the money that was already cut, not being able to cut money that was already spent last year. I mean, it is rather hard to go back in time to cut money already spent last year. In terms of the future, what the sequester would do is cut about $1 trillion in spending from 2013 to 2021. In terms of what this means, in terms of how much it is an increase versus future spending, that depends really on the future action of Congress and what we are supposing they would have done in terms of increasing each year. But $1 trillion across the board, it's not play money. This is not I think it gets back to that. This is a serious sum, and this is serious real-world impacts. It's not just a figure.
You also are concerned that women would be hurt under sequestration, according to your research. How?
Yes. There are numerous programs that benefit women that the federal government does fund. You know, for instance, the federal government does provide funding to states that to help pay for breast and cervical cancer screenings and diagnostic tests. And we're looking at cuts of about $8 million overall and about over $200,000 to Wisconsin. But what does the $200,000 in Wisconsin mean? It means about, you know, close to about 850 actual fewer screenings that women will be able to have. And I mean, I'm not sure where these women would turn if they, you know, to get their breast cancer screenings if this money is lost.
And we, and I'm sorry, because we just have a minute before our newscast, very briefly, the sequestration cuts would also make it harder for people to find jobs?
Yes, because we are cutting the, we are cutting programs like Jobs Corps and Employment Services, which help connect workers with jobs and helps get them job training and job search assistance. Those programs would be cut as well, and so it's about 23,000 fewer Wisconsinites that will receive these type of services.
Yeah, and for those who argue that spending just has gotten so out of control in Washington that we need something like sequestration to rein that spending in, what's wrong with that thinking in our last 30 seconds?
We need smart cuts. We need a smart approach to the deficit reduction. We need a mixture, a balanced mixture of both smart targeted cuts and also revenue by closing wasteful tax loopholes. We cannot ask the American people, the American families, we cannot ask children, seniors, women to bear all of this themselves. This is something that for everyone to take part in, we all have a responsibility to this.
Thank you so much for being with us. Anna Chu is with the American Progress Action Fund. Another perspective on this after we check the news. This is the Ideas Network. Our examination of the sequestration cuts continues in this half hour with a guest who says they're minuscule compared to actual spending levels. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 7:37 on this Tuesday, February 26th. We just heard from a guest who says the cuts will harm education, public safety, those looking for work or seeking health care, and more. Now our guest will tell us why he welcomes sequestration, and we'll wonder if you do too, and why or why not. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Tom Giovanetti. He is president of the Institute for Policy Innovation. His piece is called Time for Blunt Tools, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Sequester. And we have posted that on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
I'm good. So what's there to love about across the board spending cuts that will affect $85 billion in different programs?
Oh, I think there's a lot to love, Joy. In fact, I think we should all set aside this coming Friday as a day to crack open a new bottle and to drink a toast to our folks in Washington, finally, after almost two decades of talking about spending restraint, actually doing something about it. The latest CBO numbers actually say that this year the effect will only be about $44 billion. It was supposed to be $85 billion, but because the sequestration was delayed by 3 months, they actually can't reduce spending by as much this year as they had planned to. So now we're down to talking about the planned federal spending for this year, for 2013, being reduced by only about 1%, one penny out of every dollar. And so all the squealing and the gnashing of teeth that you hear is because of the federal government facing the prospects of not spending one penny out of every dollar they were planning to spend. I'm willing to bet that there's not a family listening to your show that over the course of the last several years hasn't reduced their discretionary spending, the amount of money they spend going out to eat, or the amount of money that they spend on entertainment or on clothes, by one penny out of a dollar. And it's about time that our federal government started reining in its spending as well.
Well, our previous guest says that this is just indiscriminate across the board cutting. It's not smart cutting. Shouldn't we be cutting, you know, the stuff that should be cut and keeping the stuff that that helps people?
Oh, absolutely. Any intelligent person would agree with that sentiment. And they had a year and a half to do it, and they didn't. Remember, what's happening on Friday was set in motion a year ago, August 2011, in the Budget Control Act. And the federal government, the president signed it, and Congress passed it. They said, we need to cut spending by $1.5 trillion over 10 years. It's very important for us to remember that the president agreed to this, and Congress agreed to it. Both sides agreed to it, and they passed it into law. They said, we will cut spending by $1.5 trillion over 10 years. And they said, we'll give ourselves a year and a half to do it. And if somehow we're not able to do our jobs, if we're not able to make the decisions that the American people have sent us here for, then we will build a device into the bill that will make our decisions for us. And they gave themselves a year and a half to do it. They utterly failed to do it. Not just Congress, but also the president. The president never put forward a list of cuts that he would accept or that he would endorse. He never did it. So now the sequester kicks in. I say in the piece that you quoted that we just released yesterday, I say that the sequester was a brilliant idea, not because that's the most intelligent way to cut spending, but it's brilliant to say that if our elected folks in Congress and the president can't do their jobs, then we will have a device built into law that will do it for them. So that's why I refer to it as a blunt tool. It's not an elegant way to do it. It's not an intelligent way to do it. But at least it's getting done after they failed to do it.
Yeah, isn't the president may not have given a list of spending cuts, but he says let's have a balanced approach. Let's cut spending and let's reform the tax code so there's some more revenue coming in as well. And doesn't he say this is going to reduce the debt by like $4 trillion?
The president says a lot, but then the president never does. Remember, the president put forward a budget in 2011 that didn't get a single vote. Not even one member of his party in the Senate voted for it. The president talks a good game, but when it actually comes time, put on the table your tax reform plan. Put on the table your spending cuts. Yes, you're right, Joy. The president always says it needs to be balanced because he seems to try to leverage every situation into a call for new tax increases. But even if there were going to be tax increases, there still have to be some spending cuts, and the president never puts them on the table.
Yeah. Do the Republicans in Congress want these across-the-board federal spending cuts, and therefore they're not willing to reach a new deal?
Well, as I said earlier, I think both sides said they wanted $1.5 trillion in spending cuts. You know, if our political leaders in Washington have gotten to the point where they write and pass legislation that they don't really mean, it's just a bluff somehow, then we're in pretty sad shape. So I have to assume that when the president and Congress signed a piece of legislation that said we're going to cut spending $1.5 trillion over 10 years, that they actually meant it. Now, we've already talked at some length about the fact that is this the best way to do it? No, of course not. We're always hearing from Washington about waste, fraud, and abuse. We're always hearing about redundant government programs. We're always hearing about the fact that government workers get higher pay and better benefits than workers in the public sector. We hear about it, and we hear about it, and we hear about it, but no one ever does anything about it. Finally, after almost 20 years of empty rhetoric from both parties, Republicans are not immune from criticism on this, both parties for 20 years have been giving us empty rhetoric on getting federal spending under control. So it's finally starting to happen this Friday. Is it being done in an artful or subtle way? No. but at least it's happening.
What about the cuts that would hurt things, like our guest at least said in our last half hour, including education, public safety, public health, workforce training, women's health, child care, airports, and the list goes on. Aren't we going to be hurt by these cuts?
Your previous guest is part of the campaign of what I call the government class squealing about how the sky is going to fall if we cut one penny out of every dollar of federal spending. And it dwarfs the imagination of anyone to think seriously that anything like that will happen. It's very important for your listeners to understand, Joy, that what we're referring to here as spending cuts, they're not even cuts at all. Federal spending was scheduled to go up this year by 4.5%. And instead of going up by 4.5%, it's going to go up by 3.5%. Really, almost nothing is actually being cut. It's like you were planning to get a 4% raise and you're only getting a 2% raise. These are not cuts in the sense that your listeners think of cuts. Your listeners think of cuts in terms of spending less money this year than we spent last year. And except for defense, that is not happening. What's happening is that government agencies were planning to get a 4% increase, and they're only getting a 3% increase. Federal spending over the next 10 years is going to go up by $1.7 trillion. These are not cuts in the normal sense of the word. These are reductions in the amount of increase that was scheduled to happen. They're not cuts. I plotted these charts on our website. I plotted two charts. I plotted overall federal spending cuts, and I plotted defense cuts. And the complaint we get from folks who visit our website is that they can't distinguish the little slivers that indicate how much is being cut because it's so insignificant. And when you look at those charts, what you see is a series of climbing bars. Federal spending is going up over the next 10 years. Defense spending is going up over the next 10 years. Head Start spending is going up. Aid to cities and states is going up. Medicare is going up. It's all going up. It's just going up by a little bit less than it was scheduled.
We are talking with Tom Giovanetti. He is president of the Institute for Policy Innovation. His recent piece is called Time for Blunt Tools, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Sequester. Why he loves the sequester, and your questions at 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We can expect some fog this morning, mild temperatures for the most part today, highs in the mid to upper 30s. Snow and wind likely beginning late this afternoon and into tonight. There is a winter weather advisory posted for much of southeast and far south central Wisconsin. Coming up after 8 o'clock, we will talk personal finances and welcome in certified financial planner Kevin McKinley for another edition of On Your Money. In fact, Kevin will talk about sequestration's potential effects on your pocketbook coming up during On Your Money after 8 o'clock. We are getting a second take on the sequestration cuts that are set to kick in this week unless Congress can reach a deal to avert sequestration. Our first guest during this hour said the cuts will harm a lot of people. Our guest in this half hour says the cuts are tiny and he welcomes them if a deadline for a deal is not reached. Our first caller is Dave in Menominee. Hi, Dave.
Hi, good morning. Well, this is what I think it's about. I think this is about uncertainty. It's about creating uncertainty. And we've seen what the Republicans have done while a Democrat has been in office. We saw what they did when Clinton was in his office. They shut it down. And this time, they're creating as much uncertainty as possible, throwing a wrench in our economy one more time, like they did over the debt ceiling debate, and they walked away from that, and our economy dived. And that's what this is about. This is about making our economy tank, slowing it down.
Why do they want to do that, Dave?
Because when President Obama or the next Democrat is out of office, they're going to turn around and say it was the president's policies that has caused all this trouble. Mm-hmm. And as we jump from crisis to crisis, manufactured by the Republicans, they are not letting our economy grow. They're not letting our economy take off. And they're going to try to blame the Democrat.
All right, let's get Tom Giovanetti to respond to that.
Thanks, Joy. Well, obviously I disagree with the caller, but I think it's interesting. One of the great ironies of history is the way Republicans actually saved Democrat presidents. Today we think of Bill Clinton as having presided over this great economy, the deficit was reduced, et cetera, et cetera. When you look at what was going on during the Clinton years, the economy was not doing well, and budget deficits were exploding until the Republicans were elected to Congress in 1995. Your caller is correct. There was a showdown over government spending. But what happened during the Clinton years is that President Clinton and the Republicans were able to come to a compromise. They were able to agree on spending cuts. They were able to agree on restraining the growth of government. They were able to agree on tax reform, and they were able to agree on regulatory reform. And so when you look at President Clinton's term, it was after the Republicans took control of Congress that things turned up and that things started doing well. So one of the great ironies of history is that the Republicans actually saved Bill Clinton from many of his own policies, and today he's viewed as presiding over a time of great economic health. I think that one of the great ironies of history is that something similar is going to happen to President Obama. President Obama has done everything he can do since he's been in office to restrain oil and gas exploration, but yet the explosion in oil and gas exploration is about the only positive thing happening in the economy right now. And when you look at the amount of taxes that are being paid, when you look at the amount of jobs that are being created in the energy sector, my guess is we will look back on the Obama years as years when things improved and did well. But again, did well despite the president's policies, did well because Republicans saved his bacon.
Billions of dollars of cuts right now, though. The White House is saying this is going to cripple economic progress. Do we really want to do that right now?
That's because the White House thinks that economic progress is related to how much money the government spends. If you go back and look at President Obama's speeches, it's very interesting. Almost any time he talks about economic growth, his first subpoint is hiring more teachers and hiring more firefighters and people like that, more government employees. When President Obama talks about economic growth, he's not talking about what we have normally described in this country as economic growth. When we talk about economic growth, we're normally talking about private sector growth, the growth of companies and the hiring of private sector employees. That's not what the president thinks. The president's worldview is fundamentally that economic growth is related to how many people are working for the government. And so he thinks, and his people think, that if again, not cut spending, if we simply reduce planned federal spending, somehow that's going to be bad for the economy. The Bureau of Labor Statistics, the federal government's own agency, says that an hour of work in the private sector creates almost $55 in GDP, in value. And it says that 1 hour worked in the federal government sector creates just a little bit over $30. So even the federal government itself admits that private sector employment is what actually drives the economy and generates GDP much more effectively than government sector work.
What we need
to do is get some of these federal employees and some of these federal dollars working in the private sector rather than in the public sector.
Jim in Westby is with us. Hello, Jim.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead, please.
I guess I'm just tired of the conversation and that, yes, this isn't a good approach, but Medicare cut nursing home reimbursement across the board 11.3% last fall because of poor or bad programmatic decisions, whether we were part of the problem or not. And our task was to figure out how to least affect our customers, the elderly we serve. And I listen to this and think, it seems like the president instructed his people to figure out how we can make the most disruptive changes to our customers as possible, kind of like when cities need to cut their budgets, so they're going to close the library and the swimming pool, as opposed to how can we accomplish this with the least disruption to the customers.
Yeah, and Jim, why are you saying the president wants this? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying the president is responsible for carrying out administrative policy and administrative direction. It is the administration that carries out the acts of Congress. Right or wrong, this is an act of Congress, and instead of looking at it as a way to least disrupt the customer, it seems like the administration has figured out how to most affect the customer and then promote that as a dire outcome. And I think it's ridiculous that they can't figure out how to buy less pencils or tablets or something that cuts their budget 3% when our budget was cut 11%.
All right. Thanks, Jim. Tom?
Yes, and I'd like to find an occasion to agree with your caller. One of the things that has me most angry today is the way the president and the federal government are all talking about how they're going to slash services to constituents as a result of the sequester. If you have to cut your budget by one penny out of a dollar or two pennies out of a dollar, you have some discretion on how to do that. And the reason we pay taxes to the federal government in the first place is the assumption that there are some valuable goods and services that the government delivers to us. What I hear the president and what I hear the White House saying right now is, if you're going to force us to get spending under control, we're going to do it in the most onerous way possible, and we're going to reduce the services that we're delivering to the taxpayers. There are other ways they could apply these sequester cuts. They could do something. You don't hear anybody talking about a single bureaucrat losing their job. You don't hear anybody talking about, well, maybe we'll start making federal employees pay a little something toward their health care like people in the private sector do. As your caller said, you don't hear them talking about the fact that, well, we can save 1% just by getting our own internal office expenses under control. That's not what you hear. All you hear is how they're going to cut the services that they're delivering to their constituents. It's a very cynical and it does seem that they're trying to do it in the most disruptive way possible rather than the least disruptive way.
Jerry in Genesee Depot is here. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. I've been in the banking business for 55 years, and I have never heard such a succinct analysis of what's wrong with this country as Tom just gave. We're heading in the same direction as Italy and Greece. Five cities in the United States, all governed by Democrats, two of them already in the dumps. Everybody's spending more money than they can take. We've seen it forever. I saw it all coming, but nobody cut back. And here we are, leaving a legacy to our children, and I have some, and they're going to have a job paying it, and they're talking about spending more money. Bah, humbug.
We only have a minute to go, Tom. Are we going to see these cuts kick in, do you think?
I'd like your last caller to spend the next minute talking about how much he enjoyed my interview, actually. Joy, I hope they don't do anything to stop the sequester. I hope it goes into effect. In fact, I'm planning a little sequester party in our offices for Friday afternoon. As your last caller pointed out, and as I've tried to make the case, these are minimal reductions in spending. If we can't do this, we might as well just declare bankruptcy now and throw up our hands and say we can't do it. The historical rate of federal spending since World War II is about 18% of GDP. Right now it's 24%, and it is scheduled to go up to 40% within this generation. That is unsustainable. Joy, the amount of spending reductions contained in the sequester are a fraction of what would be necessary to balance the budget. We're not even getting close to a balanced budget. So it should be very discouraging to your callers.
All right, I'm going to have to leave it there. Thank you very much. Tom Giovanetti is president of the Institute for Policy Innovation. Thanks for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.